Hi, Maria. How you doing?
Hey, Deb. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Chilly as hell over here, though. It's so cold here today.
Same. It seems like we kind of went right into wintertime without stopping by fall for too long.
Yep. Yeah, my kids were asking, actually, like, this morning, like, is it wintertime already? I'm like, no. Technically, that starts in December. But yes, it's really cold outside. You need to wear hats and mittens.
Exactly.
So why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Great. Deb, I wanted to thank you for having me on today. I am very, very excited to be here. Right. So my name is Maria Rieger. I've been self-publishing books since about 2015. I've self-published 8 books. I have a fiction and nonfiction line. So I write contemporary romance, romantic suspense, and I also write parenting books. I have a bit of an eclectic background. I practice corporate and banking law during the day, and I write at night. I'm also practicing.
You're not the first lawyer I've talked to.
That's, yeah, I believe it. Yeah, a lot of us become writers and authors. And I'm also a practicing astrologer, and I incorporate some astrology into my positive parenting books. So that always kind of throws people out the left field.
Right, because it's very right brain, left brain, it feels like both of them. Like, you don't expect someone to have both of those.
Right, exactly. So I've been writing my entire life since I was about 13 years old. I'm very introverted. I've always been more comfortable kind of in my head and in my own company than in big groups or social events or things like that. So I have a very rich creative inner world where I'm always daydreaming. So it got to the point as an adult that I had so many kind of narrative stories running around my head that I felt compelled to write them all down. And that's when I started the entire self-publishing journey.
I 100% agree with that. I was just talking to somebody this morning about how I get cranky when I don't write because it feels like the story piles up in my head and you don't have a chance to get it. I don't know. That was the best explanation I could come up with, but I 100% understand what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to get it out on paper, even if it's just a scene sometimes.
Right.
I have to and if I don't have access to my laptop or a pen and paper, I whip out my phone, I take the notes, and I think, okay, good. I feel better. I have it down, memorialized. I can move on with my day.
Yeah, just it makes you more sane to have the story outside out of your head.
Yes.
So today we're talking about common legal issues, I guess, from authors about writing. So what's the most common one you come across?
So I get asked questions about these topics a lot. They pop up a lot in Facebook author groups, other small business groups. And I see a lot of people, usually non-attorneys, answering these questions as if they know them. And I see a lot of incorrect information. And so I want to caution authors that for really specific legal questions, you need to consult a local attorney in your jurisdiction who practices that area of law, right? And I'm licensed to practice law in the state of Virginia in the US. So obviously that's my background. And this is obviously from a US perspective. So I want to touch a little bit on copyright issues. I get asked this question a lot, and I two different kind of main issues. One is how authors can protect their own works, right? Their own copyright to their own works. And then the other one is about how you can request, how authors want to request, they want to use song lyrics or quotes from a book in their book. What do they need to do that, protect themselves legally?
Right.
So the first question I get asked all the time, kind of, how can I get copyright over my work? Like, do I need to register with the US Copyright Office to have copyright over my work? The short answer to that is no. When an author creates a creative work, a novel, short story, poem, whatever, you have copyright over that work just by virtue of creating it, right?
Okay.
So you don't need to do anything to exert copyright over that work.
Okay.
Why it's a good idea to register your works with the Copyright Office. Copyright Office is under the US Patent and Trademark Office. It's a federal agency. Why it's a good idea for authors to register is because if you ever have to sue for copyright infringement, if someone is illegally using your works,
prove that it's yours.
Well, the thing is about damages. You sue for copyright infringement in federal court under the U.S. Copyright Act, and you have to show damages. Now, for newer authors, showing actual damages, you may not have very many damages if you're a newer author just starting out. In fact, it may cost so much to actually bring the case in federal court and hire an attorney, you may not even do it. But if you have registered your work with the Copyright Office, you can seek statutory damages instead of actual damages. And that can go up to about $30,000 per work. And if you can show intentional that the copyright infringement was intentional and willful, mm-hmm. those damages can go up to potentially $150,000 per book. That's why it's a good idea to register. And you go to copyright.gov and you can register your book, each book or short story or collection of short stories or whatever online. You pay a fee. It's about $50 more or less per work. Mm-hmm. That's why I recommend authors to go register their works to get that extra protection for the statutory damages should they ever have to bring a copyright infringement action.
Now, is that something the author has to do? Say they were traditionally published or they do hybrid publishing. That's not something the publisher does for them, correct? That's something the author has
to do? Correct. Yeah. If you're traditionally published, talk to the publisher about who's going to do that. But it's usually the author. I self-publish. I don't traditionally publish. So I'm not sure what the process is for that if you're traditionally published. But yeah, check with your agent or publishing company if you're traditionally published.
Okay. Good to know. So what about the other half of that question? The story, the song lyrics, copyrights, using somebody else's work, basically.
Exactly. Right. So I get asked this question a lot. In fact, I have a very detailed blog post on using song, how to request permission to use song lyrics in your books at lawschoolheretic.com is my blog. So basically, if you want to use song lyrics in your book, it's okay to use the titles of songs in your book. Mm-hmm. If you want to use song lyrics, you need to request permission from the copyright holder. Now, in the U.S., there are three main recording companies that own copyright of song lyrics. So you would search their online databases and find out which one holds the rights to your song, and you make an email request to them.
Okay.
It's kind of a long process. It kind of takes a long time. It can take months to actually get a response, but that's the initial process. And I go over this in detail in my blog post, but essentially that's what you're doing. And then when you receive the copyright permission, you can use the lyrics, usually have to pay them a fee, whatever that is, depends on the copyright holder. You use the lyrics, and then in your front matter of your book, you'll make sure you're crediting that. Use of such and such lyrics of such song used with permission of X company.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So it's kind of the same as the published work where you have to go to the copyright owner of the lyrics, not even necessarily the artist. Like you have to
who owns
the copyright of those lyrics.
That's exactly right. Often it's not the artist. It's actually a different company. Right.
That's so weird.
Right. And you definitely want to request permission because you are opening yourself up to a copyright infringement lawsuit if you don't. And these companies have a lot of resources to litigate. You don't want to find yourself in the position where you're litigating as a defendant.
I imagine that is especially not against that kind of legal force coming at you. That would be very scary and overwhelming.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
I assume you can use the song title or stuff like that under the thing where you say you use Kleenex or mention Harry, that they're reading Harry Potter, something like it, the common use or something like that.
Yes. Fair use doctrine. Right. Yes. You could use titles of songs, titles of books without having to request copyright permission. That's correct. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. It's something like you can say they went to McDonald's to get something because then you won't have
absolutely
get sued.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, some works I want to point out, some creative works are in the public domain, which means they are not protected by copyright law. So the Bible is a good example of that.
Yeah, I always think Alice in Wonderland.
That's another good example. Usually it's because the copyright has expired. There's a time limit on that. So you could use the work without having to request permission. Now, for example, the works of Mozart, obviously copyright expired would have expired a long time ago. Those are in public domain. Sometimes, though, you can have a individual public domain works that someone has grouped into a collection, and that is can be copyright protected, even though it's a collection of public domain works.
So complicated.
Again, so this is why it's good to consult with a local attorney on that, right? But that is possible too. If a public domain work, you don't have to request any copyright permission.
Okay. Now, my next question is people who help you, how do you credit them? And I don't know, do you service to them, but also legally cover yourself?
People who
help you write a book, like say you have to contact, say you're writing a police procedural.
Right.
And you want to talk to a local detective about their, I'm making stuff up here, but
sure.
Understand where I'm going with it.
Sure. Yeah. So this is not a co-author. This is somebody you're kind of consulting.
Research, basically.
I mean, you could ask, you can get advice from them. You can credit them. To my knowledge, you're not legally required to credit them, but often, you know, you'll see in the acknowledgements, typically at either at the beginning or the end of the book, you'll see some acknowledgements where authors will, and that's very good practice to show appreciation to all those people who helped you, whether beta readers or experts that you had to consult. Most authors do have to consult some experts. Right.
Yeah,
that's
like,
not a yeah.
My weird example of police procedural was I don't write police procedurals. I don't know anything about police or legal whatever. So I would have to be like, I need help. I need to go talk to this person and that person and that person.
Right. Exactly.
So what else do people commonly come to you and ask you questions about?
Right. Well, one is about, can I publish under my own name? Do I have to publish under a company name? Okay. Mm-hmm. You can publish under your own name. You can set up your author business as just you as an individual. Basically, legally, that's a sole proprietorship. The reason I always, always recommend authors to set up a limited entity, like a limited liability company, that's the most common, is because if you are ever sued as a defendant and you are operating as a sole proprietorship under your own name, when it comes to damages, all your personal assets are potentially on the table, right? So if you have any real estate, retirement accounts, brokerage accounts, anything on the table, you want to avoid that. You want to limit your liability. So when you publish under if you set up a limited liability corporation, limited liability company or a corporation, but the LLC is the most common with small business owners, and you publish under that name and you maintain that company separate from your personal business, you get the limited liability protection. So if somebody were to sue you, they can only access, if they seek damages, they can only access the assets of that company, not your personal assets. So that's why I always recommend authors to set up the LLC. It's very easy to do. It's a state regulated matter of state law. So you go to your state corporation commission's website to see how to do that. In Virginia, you set it up online. You pay about $80 a year to maintain the LLC active. You can file articles of organization, which is like kind of a document indicating just how the company is set up. You can find templates of that online. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to set it up, but the potential payoff is enormous because you get the limited liability protection. I cannot emphasize that enough. And then to get
that's
the limited
life, something I never realized an author would need to do.
Right. I mean, look, you want to think long term, as most of, you know, if you're a newer author starting out, you may think, and people have told me this before, well, I don't expect to get sued. No one expects to get sued.
Right.
But, you know, in the US,
there's crappy people out there.
Absolutely. In the US, it's a very litigious environment. I mean, I know people personally who have been sued with absolutely frivolous lawsuits, and that costs time and money to defend, hire counsel in civil court to defend. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want, you would never want your personal assets to be on the line in a suit like that. So you definitely want to set up an LLC. Again, go to your state corporation commission website to do that. And it's pretty easy to set up. And after you set up the LLC, in the front matter of your book, you're going to list the LLC as the publisher, XYZ LLC as the publisher of your book, not you. You're obviously still the author, but the entity is the publisher. You want to maintain a separate business bank account, separate business email to maintain that separate from your personal bank account, your personal email. You want to use LLC abbreviation after the name of the company. That's good practice to make sure people are on notice that it is a limited liability company they're dealing with. So things like that.
Now, I noticed you said that you wanted the LLC to be the publisher. Mm-hmm. Now, this is only applying then to self-published artists?
This is correct. Yeah, this is correct. Yeah. So I'm talking from a self-published perspective. Obviously, if you are traditionally published, you want to talk to your agent, to your, you know, attorney to see how, what you need to do to get, or if you even need to set that up. Okay. So we're talking about, if you're traditionally published, it's still probably a good idea, but there is a little more complicated. So you want to talk to your agent, and your agent will be able to refer you to attorneys that can speak on your behalf about how to do that.
Okay. So, going along with the random questions I have here, and I apologize, these are just questions that I pull out of my head, things that may pertain to me or my story, because that's the only experience I have. But I hear a lot about defamation. How do we avoid that?
Right. So that's another kind of big area that authors, especially newer authors, have questions about. So especially for nonfiction authors. So defamation, we're talking about written defamation, so libel.
Right.
How can you protect yourself, especially if you're a nonfiction author writing about real people or writing mm-hmm. a memoir?
Exactly.
So I want to point out that truth is an absolute defense to defamation. So mm-hmm. if you're writing about X individual and you're clearly writing about an identifiable person, you want to maintain to the extent that you can any records that prove that what you're saying about them is true. If it's ever litigated, right, you have the mm-hmm. records there. Now that can get very costly, especially if it's a he said, she said situation, right?
Right.
But you want to definitely maintain any records about that. Now, it's also a good idea if you're writing nonfiction to not use real names, to not use identifying characteristics. In short, don't describe the person in the book in such a way as it could only be one person on the planet, right? You right. want to not use identifying characteristics, kind of blur all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So things like that, that stuff you could do to protect yourself. Okay. If you're writing a memoir in first person, mm-hmm. right? About, I don't know, your parents or people close to you.
Okay. Yep.
That's a little more difficult. Okay, hopefully those people would not sue you, but I've heard crazier things, so yeah. You never know. So
more awful things have happened than your parents.
Absolutely,
you.
Absolutely. So one technique authors can do is write more of a creative nonfiction work. So you're writing in third person about a character, mm-hmm. and you're writing about other characters related to that person, the parents of that person, or whatnot.
Right.
And again, without using identifying characteristics or kind of using different descriptors and things like that. Those mm-hmm. are steps you can take to kind of help you, protect against a possible defamation lawsuit. Remember, anybody could bring a lawsuit. So it doesn't stop somebody from bringing a lawsuit, but it's the difference between getting it thrown out at kind of summary judgment or having to actually go and litigate, which can become very costly. Mm-hmm. So, and obviously fiction authors, it's pretty common for us fiction authors to kind of use real people as bases for our characters. So as long as we're blurring that and not using things that are too specific, that's okay.
Yeah. So like my husband is part of every male character I write, but I never write a character that's just my husband.
Of course. Yeah, right. Exactly. So another area this comes up is kind of where, like, I've had questions from physicians about writing about cases. Well, obviously there are some federal privacy laws involved there that right. I just don't know enough to speak about. So that's something else they would need to consider, that specific situation. But also if you're writing about patients, you could say, I had a case where a patient was diagnosed with X and the treatment response was X. That's okay, as long as you're not using identifying and, information right. about the patient. So that's, mm-hmm. that's usually okay. In my parenting books, I'll use real life examples people have shared with me, but obviously I'll blur some of the facts and the descriptors.
Right. Change the name.
Right. Change that out. So that's all stuff that you can do to protect against a lawsuit, defamation
what
lawsuit.
What about that standard thing I see a lot in fiction books, like just begin before mm-hmm. you even get like all places and names are fictional, like that little like standard, like one sentence disclaimer. Is that something you should definitely include?
Yes. It's always a good idea to include that. Not based on real people or not, right? This, I forget the exact wording. None of the characters described in this work are real or something, or they're
right,
entirely
something
fictional.
Like that, yeah.
Always a good idea to have a disclaimer like that. Yep.
Okay. Now we're talking about people. What about places? Like, what if you're inspired by a business? And I'm thinking like a fiction wise, because that's what I write. So I think mainly fiction.
Right.
What if you write a place that's inspired by, I don't know, like your favorite coffee shop or something?
Yeah. I mean, that's okay. Obviously if you're writing about a specific location, mm-hmm. that is clearly only one location.
Right.
And if you say something negative, the business owner may sue you for defamation. You want to be careful about that.
Murder happens there.
Right. Exactly. So that's, you want to be careful about that. You want to make sure that if you're writing about a specific location, mm-hmm. that everything you're writing is true. Otherwise I would say, suggest what we talked about, which is you kind of write about a similar location, different
place,
name,
yeah.
different,
don't make
different
it
street.
Too close.
Exactly. So that's what I would recommend.
Okay. Now, we did briefly talk about things in pop culture, but what about things like Star Wars, Harry Potter? How about just characters? Obviously, they couldn't read from those pages,
right.
they like them. They mentioned they have posters up. I don't know. Is that right. still under all the common use?
Right. That's usually okay. If you're just using the name of a character in a book, mm-hmm. like Leia from right. Star Wars, that's exactly. usually okay. You would not need permission. Generally, you would not need permission from the copyright holder to just use the name of a character.
Mm-hmm. What other common questions do you usually get?
So, these are the main questions. Something I wanted to point out about this has come up about the limited liability company.
Yeah.
If you have a sole member limited liability company like I do, you still mm-hmm. get the limited liability protection. Now, under federal tax law, when you have a sole member limited liability company, mm-hmm. for tax reporting purposes, you report as an individual, but that's separate from the limited liability protection. That's an issue I've seen confused a lot in okay. small business groups. So I just want to point that out. Like in my state of Virginia, even if you only have a single member LLC like I do, uh-huh. you still get the full limited liability protection. So it's okay. still a good idea. Even if you're just one person, most authors are just one person in the company, so you still get the limited liability benefits from having that entity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be a question for, I don't know, my family accountant, I guess. Yeah. I don't understand the
right.
filing taxes as the, because I'm assuming right. all your book earnings then go to the LLC.
That's correct. That's correct. Yes.
Do you then pay yourself a wage based you off
can.
Of that?
You can.
How yeah. do you do
you
it?
Can. How do I do it? I just leave all mine in the business. Yep.
Okay.
So I just use the proceeds for marketing or other things, or use it mostly for the business.
Okay.
I leave it in the business account. But yeah, you can That's pay true. Yourself, can pay yourself. And again, once you're making, you know, want to think big picture, once you're making a lot of money for your book sales, mm-hmm. like you said, talking to an accountant as far as minimizing tax burdens and how you should distribute income and kind of what accounts, that's all, mm-hmm. those are all good questions for your financial accountant, your tax accountant,
right.
your tax attorney. Right. Right.
Yeah. As you're saying that, I realize that it may have been a bit of a stupid question, because I think most authors, especially as they're starting out and who aren't mm-hmm. like, I don't know, like John Grisham or something,
right.
They're using their money that they get from the book sales, put right back into marketing
right.
to get more
book right.
sales.
Exactly.
Yeah, money doesn't stay there long.
Right. No, not if you're a new author. That's exactly right. Right. That's
you
exactly
gotta pay
right.
domain names and yep. like Facebook ads. And yeah,
right.
that money does not stay very long in your account.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, those are kind of the main questions I get. Another question I've had is about contractual language. If you're looking to be traditionally published and sign a publishing contract.
That actually was my next question.
Oh, is it? Okay. If you want to ask it, that's fine.
Okay. Well, it's just same thing. I was going to ask, like, do you need to hire a lawyer to look over any contract that an agent or publishing house sends you?
I would definitely recommend that you do, that you have an attorney. Yeah. That you have an attorney review the contract. It is tough to give like a list of terms you should look for. You should definitely mm-hmm. look at what rights, if any, you're giving up, your royalty rate, obviously, and the mm-hmm. rights that you're giving up. It's, you know, one area I want to definitely caution newer authors about are the audiobook rights. Audiobooks make up a third of the market right now. They're enormously, enormously profitable. I have talked to authors who have cautioned me, you know, authors who are making a very good living from writing, who mm-hmm. have cautioned me and other newer authors that sometimes the publishing companies will want exclusive control of your audiobook rights, that you're essentially giving up your audiobook rights. Mm. That's something I would caution about. I would caution newer authors not to do that, or be very careful about doing that. I have heard from some authors that the publishing companies have gotten the audiobook rights in a contract and then just let them sit, have done nothing, have not published audiobooks. So that's an enormous source of potential revenue you're giving up. Exactly. So
I listen to audiobooks these days.
Absolutely. So if you're a newer author, I would caution you against giving up audiobook rights. Now, as a newer author, you also may feel like you just don't have the bargaining power or enough bargaining power mm-hmm. with the publishing companies. That may be a factor why you should consider self-publishing, but that's mm-hmm. me on my, you know, soapbox.
Right.
But that's just another thing you need to consider if you're considering, you know, being self-published versus traditional publishing. But that's a huge thing. So that's what you want to look at. What rights are you giving up when you're signing the publishing contract?
Exactly.
So yeah,
I talked to an author semi-recently. Yeah, she was telling me that her contract with this publisher, which she did not end up not signing the contract, but they took a ridiculous percentage that if it was ever sold to a media like Netflix, TV, movie, like right. it was something like, I want to say like 60-75%, something like that yeah. was their cut. And it was in the very fine print. Like she would have yeah. never caught that.
That's very good that she did. So some authors or newer authors may think, oh, I'll never get my stuff made into a series. That's not mm-hmm. true. I've known relatively, you know, I've met relatively unknown, at least unknown to me, authors who like sold rights of their work to Netflix, right? Mm-hmm. So that does happen. Like that's a real right. possibility. So yeah, you want to think about that.
Places like that are constantly on the lookout for new storylines and stuff. So yeah, it's very yeah. important.
They're always looking for new storylines. Exactly. It's exactly right. So definitely something to think about.
The next question I had was, if you're co-authoring or you're collaborating, do you need to draw up a legal contract between both or I guess all parties before you start working on a project together?
You don't need to. I would highly recommend that you do. Right. Because, for example, who's getting the royalties? If you're co-authoring it, mm-hmm. you know, more or less 50% of the work, you're doing 50% of the work. Other co-author is doing 50% of the work. Who's getting the royalties? Are you going to split them down the middle? That needs to be memorialized in writing. Mm-hmm. Right.
Especially right. like I'm thinking like in like even for posterity's sake, like say that something horrific happens and one of the co-authors,
yep.
I don't know, dies or gets in a very bad accident. I don't know, something. I'm being very morbid here. Right. Sorry.
But it does happen. Yeah, it does happen.
Yeah. And you have to be prepared that like, so the victim's family, I say victim, I'm doing an outline and there's a dead body. So victim's in my head. but so like your co-author's family is taken care of, but also that they're not taking advantage of you and stuff.
Absolutely. It's just good practice. I mean, because you may trust somebody now or have a good relationship with a friend and co-author a book with them. And who knows? I mm-hmm. mean, things can happen. So.
All right. Well, we blew through my questions here today.
Oh, fantastic. I think we've gone through pretty much all of what I wanted to talk about, too. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Good. Well, it was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Deb.
Yeah. And so you want to tell listeners where they can connect with you and buy your books and watch you on YouTube?
Absolutely. So I have on Amazon. I'm on my website is lawschoolheretic.com. I have mm-hmm. a YouTube channel, which is only on my parenting content. It's called Positive Parenting with Astrology, or you can search my name, Maria Rieger. I also have a book called Self-Publishing Primer, which is kind of an extended outline of all the steps you need to take, including some of the including some of the legal steps we talked about when you're mm-hmm. self-publishing your
that
first
would be
book.
Helpful to a lot of right. people.
Right. So that's available on Amazon, and you can also get that for free by going to my blog, lawschoolheretic.com, clicking on free stuff, and you can click mm-hmm. that link and I'll send it right to your email for free. But that would have been helpful for me to have when I was first self-publishing, because I was right. like, I don't know what I'm doing. So I basically did like a short, you know, it's a short book. It's only about mm-hmm. like 7,000 words, just all the main steps you need to think about and the order. Right. And then with some helpful links. So that's kind of just to help new authors have at least a guide mm-hmm. to know what they're supposed to do and when.
Awesome. And I assume all your fiction stuff is available on Amazon, on your website?
That's right. On my website, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and same for my parenting books. And my parenting books are also on Audible. So you can search my name nice. Under Audible and they're there.
Brief question before we leave that's completely off topic. How did you do the Audible format for those? Did you hire a voice actor? Did you do those on your own?
I hired a company to produce them for me. Yep.
Oh, nice. I'm always very curious about that because I've talked to people yeah. who do it on their own and then people yeah. who have hired actors. So I'm just right. always curious.
Right. That's a great question because a lot of authors do that differently. Like mm-hmm. you said, some read their own stuff. I just don't have the time. So I have a day
right.
job.
I don't have the right voice right. for it.
I don't have the patience.
Yeah. I can't come off as like a gruff man. Like it's impossible for my voice to do.
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
All right. Well, you have been a lovely guest.
Thank you, Deb. I've really enjoyed this. Thanks so much.
Thank you for being on. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you. You too. Take care.
Read and Write Podcast is edited and produced by Deborah Z. Barth. Music was provided by Lo-Fi Girl and can be found at lofigirl.com or on their YouTube channel. Audio effects were created by Red Octopus and Black River Phonogram. Show notes and previous episodes can be found at readandwritepodcast.com. And that's it. Thank you for listening to the show. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to rate Read and Write on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you have a suggestion for a future episode, drop me a line. I'm always open to suggestions. Also, did you know that Read and Write publishes 3 episodes a week? Check out the podcast's YouTube channel for Write With Me Mondays live streams and 30-second book reviews on Fridays.